who's hosting this episode?
It's me.
Okay.
And there's our opener.
Welcome to Reengage, a fantastically prepped and horrifically researched podcast about Star Trek The Next Generation and four Gen X idiots who are watching it for at least a second time. As adults, or quasi-adults, working in the industry of entertainment, each in our own ways. These are the stories that meant a lot to us as adolescents and to Jimmy, a young adult.
Thank you for saying young.
And we are ecstatic to examine each one in order as we re-engage, if you will, with the material today. So I'm going to go around the horn and say hello. My name is Eric Curry. I am your host for this particular episode where we examine, I didn't write down the title, The Next Phase, which is a wonderful pun that we will get to throughout the episode itself. And with me, as always, are my three compatriots. We'll start with Kate Yeager. How are you, Kate?
I am so good, and it's because you are on the same continent as me, and that just feels right.
It's really fantastic. I am on the west coast of the United States, united in the metropolitan area of Seattle with the rest of the crew here. I'm very excited. Greg Tito, you are also in the Seattle area today. How are you?
That's true. I am, and I am excited for you to be within our boundaries, if you know what I mean.
I feel like I know what you mean, but I think you mean there are no boundaries. Where we're going,
we don't need
there
roads.
Are no boundaries. And Jimmy G, how's it going down there? I say down there because in my quadrant on Zoom, you're in the lower right corner.
I'm doing really well, my friend. Thank you. Welcome back to Stateside, and I'm excited to talk.
Well, then let's get to it. This, as I said, is the episode, The Next Phase. It is late in the season of five as we re-examine the series. I was not familiar with this episode, hardly at all. I did not remember any of the characters, nor really the setup, but it was exciting to see Ensign Ro featured so prominently as she was still kind of the new and shiny character and certainly still mysterious. And we get a lot of insight into her motivations and priorities as this episode unfolds. So I was delighted to deal with it. But first, let's find out what was happening in the world. Greg Tito, what was going on? Cheer us up or bum us out in equal or opposite ratio as you see fit.
Will do. That's my lot in life, is to bum you out or make you happy, but never keep you steady. This was May 18th, 1992, when this first aired. And a day after this, three kind of fun things happened. On May 19th, the 27th Amendment was ratified. Anybody remember what the 27th Amendment is?
Is it pay raises?
It's pay raises. You got it. There you go.
Hey.
Bar trivia goes to Eric Curry for this one. Fun, interesting fact. It just basically means that the standing Congress can't give them raises for that term. Any legislation that increases their salary goes for the next term. So you got to make sure you get elected next time in order to get paid. But funny thing, this is an amendment that was first put to the states to ratify alongside the Bill of Rights. This was 11, there was, I think, 11 amendments submitted. All 10 of the Bill of Rights were totally be like, yep, totally. And then this one just fell by the wayside until a college student wrote about it in 1982 saying that it could still be ratified. It just kind of petered out and none of the states continued pushing this forward, and he started a grassroots campaign. And so here we are 10 years later in 1992, it finally being ratified. And I found that at least a little bit interesting.
Yeah.
The system works.
It's a nice bullet point on your resume, right?
Yeah.
I helped ratify the 27th Amendment. What have you done, sir?
Sadly, that man was Brett Kavanaugh. No, I.
See, he lifts us up. He pulls us down.
Well, here's the even farther down into tabloid territory here of the Howard Stern variety. Amy Fisher shot Mary Jo Buttafuoco in the face on May 19th, 1992. the Long Island Lolita, as she was called in all of the tabloids. She was a 17-year-old who was having an affair with this guy in Long Island and went to...
Switch that, reverse it.
What's that?
Switch that. There was an older man who was sexually molesting a 17-year-old.
Yes. She decided to shoot this person in the face after a 15-minute argument at the door. Mary Jo Buttafuoco survived. They weren't able to remove the bullet from her, but she was in surgery all night long. And Amy Fisher went on to be the butt of many, many, many jokes over the course of the 90s.
But not as many as Joey Buttafuoco.
What a name.
As we all know.
Exactly. Another name that will live in infamy. I got one more. Dan Quayle, U.S. Vice President, decided to, in a campaign speech, mention that Murphy Brown was not a good role model for our entire country. I actually looked at the speech. He only mentions her in one kind of bit. He says, "It doesn't help matters when primetime TV has Murphy Brown, a character who supposedly epitomizes today's intelligent, highly paid professional woman, mocking the importance of fathers by bearing a child alone and calling it just another lifestyle choice." I watched a lot of Murphy Brown. I didn't really get that they were mocking the importance of fathers in any way throughout that series.
Well, because of course they weren't, right?
It was ridiculous.
I mean, any more than any sitcom ever has mocked fathers by having the main character be an idiot. This just didn't have that character.
Right. Exactly. And it led to Quayle being, just a butt of everyone's jokes over the course of this entire administration, as well as this campaign. And I'm sure we'll have a few other zingers, he says, because I think the potato incident is coming up soon.
The potato debacle.
Debacle.
And if I remember right, they mentioned him on Murphy Brown repeatedly thereafter.
Yeah, they actually devoted an entire episode to mocking him after this incident. So I think he got the wrong end of the deal on that one.
Yes, truly delightful.
And he should have fired his scriptwriter.
Well, we'll keep ours going since we are all that unpaid position shared equally amongst us. Thank you, Greg Tito. Is that it for the Weeko? Perfect. All right. Well, then, Kate, lift us up where we belong. What was happening in the music scene at this point?
Well, we continue to have Chris Cross at number one with the song Jump. Nice. We were jumping for weeks at this point, and man, we had shin splints. The number one movie was Lethal Weapon 3.
Ooh.
Oh, wow.
Joe Pesci.
Blonde Pesci.
Yeah. Fuck Mel Gibson. I decided that instead we would focus on a movie that opened that weekend that I remember fondly, and that is Encino Man. Oh, wow. What a classic. Come on now. And on television, on May 22nd, after 30 years, Johnny Carson hosted The Tonight Show for the 4,531st and final time, retiring at the age of 66.
That's a lot of shows.
And that's what was happening in pop culture. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do, pop culture.
Excuse me, he was 66 when he retired? 66.
He seems way older.
Yeah.
Holy shit, I thought he's pushing 80 when
I did too. I did too.
I remember being allowed to stay up late enough to watch those last few ones. Because, I fucked with Johnny Carson when I was a kid. He was funny as fuck.
He was funny.
But are you kidding me? 66?
Yep. And had been hosting for 30 years.
Yeah. Oh, that's nuts. All right. That's gonna blow my mind for a very brief time. Is that our pop culture takeout?
Oh, I sang the song and everything. It's done.
I love it. All right. Moving on from there, Jimmy G, what you got?
All right. Well, behind the scenes, this was supposed to be a cheap bottle episode, but it ended up being one of the more expensive episodes of the season, mainly due to the special effects that we see with the phasing. We learn that Picard headhunted Geordi, and Riker has known Geordi the longest. And the shuttle that we see Data in Worf pilot is the Goddard. That was named after American rocket scientist Robert H. Goddard. And the Romulan science vessel figures prominently in this episode, was last seen and is a redress of the scout ship we saw in The Defector. And this is one of the few episodes that doesn't start out with a star date, but we do learn the star date. It's printed on Rose's death certificate, 4592.4. And finally, from this comes from a guy wearing a genius t-shirt moment in episode 203, Ensign Row, and episode 214, The Conundrum. It's clearly stated that Row's troublesome incident occurred on Garon 3. But in episode 224, The Next Phase, Picard says the incident happened on Garon 4. I mean, what are we to believe? This is some sort of magic planet swap or something?
Doctor, shut up, nerd! And
that's all from the Nemesis Files.
All right, beautiful. From there, my friends, we move directly to our co-stars and guest stars of the episode. And there were several. I mean, we start out prominently with Mirok, who is Thomas Kopachi, who has been in everything ever made. He is currently... literally, he's currently to be seen in Girls 5 Eva. You know, he popped up in that this month. He's been in every single thing to do with Star Trek, including things based on Star Trek, like Babylon 5. But he has 7 different characters throughout the Star Trek universe, starting with this episode of Star Trek The Next Generation. Some of the highlights of his career, of course, include working with Mike Figgis on many things, including Leaving Las Vegas. He was in Catch Me If You Can as Principal Evans, and the memorable boot salesman in No Country for Old Men. As I had said, he'd been in 7 different characters spread throughout the Star Trek universe, plus Babylon 5. Things like The West Wing, Psych, Joan of Arcadia, Carnival, some of my favorites kind of spread throughout the decades, into Fallen Angels, things like Civil Wars, L.A. Law, starting with Without a Trace as a police officer in 1983. Really a fantastic career. From there, we examine Verrill, who's played by Susanna Thompson, a actor that also is continuing to work. And truth be told, she's a series regular, 5 episodes of that so far. She was Moira Queen, the matriarch on Arrow for 48 episodes, had a really terrific run there, as well as on Kings, which was a really short-lived series. I really enjoyed myself watching that back in the day. Once and again, of course, interfered famously with her ability to play the Borg Queen in the final episode of Voyager. So it went back to the actor who had originated the role in the movies, but she had played it for 3 episodes of Voyager in addition to her work in this episode as well. She was in The X-Files, Civil Wars, Silk Stockings, really a terrific career. Also in this episode, because I want to hit 4 of them, we have Chief Brosmer, whose presence is never really explained, but she gives a really terrific performance in this. It's Shelby Leverington, mostly a stage actor that we haven't seen on screen since 2009, but in basically everything for a few episodes, including Days of Our Lives, Mike Hammer, Beverly Hills 90210, ER, Women's Murder Club, etc. A terrific career, both on stage in New York. And from there, we round out with Brian Cousins, who played Parham. Mr. Cousins has been in many, many things, including Mandroid. When you see Mandroid, you have to bring it up. It's very important that people at least remember that it existed.
Mandroid.
But we also have, you know, Desperate Housewives, The Mentalist, really big TV shows throughout his career, NCIS, Without a Trace, Huff, if you remember that, really a fun series if you can track that down. Again, with the Joan of Arcadia, we mentioned that twice in one episode, which has got to be a record for us so far. The TV series of Time Cop, also, if you can track it down, as good as the film, I will venture to say. Heart to Heart, the TV movie follow-up to this TV series. L.A. Law, Killer Instinct, and started with Longtime Companion, a movie worth tracking down as well in 1989. That leads us into talking about the episode itself. And my God, the jump start. It happens right away. The super chill opening of an Enterprise in motion over like that serene G major score, that... But once it gets inside the bridge, Picard is pacing. He's towards the camera. He's away from the camera. It's dramatic for 2 seconds. And then he demands to know the time of Data. And I'm reminded that we used to call a physical number on our telephones to get a computer to tell us out loud what the time was. Do you guys remember that?
Oh, yes. My kids do that now, though, using
really?
The Alexas when they can't see a clock.
Oh, sure.
So it's kind of we have you know turned into Star Trek with the computer telling us what time it is.
I love this. But he asks basically what time it is for Data. In those 2 seconds, we also find out that we're rendezvousing with Romulans like right now. And that we need to know how soon we can use the transporter with them. Like a lot is going on here. So what was all going on in your heads? This is all within the first 15 seconds.
It's just a great opening, like you said. Like I love starting in the middle of things. It's my favorite yes. thing to do as an actor with an audition is I like to start my monologues in the middle. Because
sure.
it's interesting, because you know that things have happened and we're starting in process and we're already heightened and things are already happening all around. And what is happening in this moment is important because this moment is important. I think it's great.
I'm right there with you. I mean, you know, that we get Romulans introduced so quickly and so matter-of-factly. And you're right. We don't know why, but we know that we're already at the we're going to be face to face with them moment. And it just comes in screaming.
That Romulan tension is a little glossed over until later on in the episode, right? Like it makes us as fans and audience members know that the Romulans are bad news. And then we have to do that. We can't infer that from the way they're acting in this opening and even the first kind of half of this episode to begin with, because everybody seems to be on the up until it's not until Worf kind of is like, are we sure we should be doing this type of thing that I was right. like, whoa, okay. Yeah, maybe we should have been talking about this from the beginning of the episode and actually doing it. But I think it has to do, they must have had those scenes happen in the conference room ahead of time. And then they're just doing on, you know, straight yeah. make the mission happen type of things.
I think I'm probably going to make the same point as Jimmy, which is that Roe very early on when
the
they
weapons.
Go into the weapons, right? Like that's, you're right, Greg, in that it's not, it's more about the tension of we've got to get there to help them. And she seems to be the only one who's like, are we being foolish by rushing into this moment?
Right. And we're not even quite there yet. Is that where you were going to hit, Jimmy?
No, I was going to say that I thought, I remember writing down, it's nice to see that not all Romulans are bad. Like,
right.
Because of what Until. I saw, the way they were playing it, it was like, oh, these guys are like, they're science officers. They're not duplicitous. They're just in trouble and they're thankful for the help. And, you know, boy, was I wrong.
I thought the same thing too, Jimmy, for a while there. Because, you know, it wasn't until I really started thinking about it. I was like, the last time we had any contact with the Romulans in this show was Spock and the Unification and Tasha Yar's
right.
descendant and all that. And that was pretty tense, right? Like, we don't like the Romulans. The Romulans want to kill us and destroy us. And so it did seem to take it for granted that we wanted to save this
Should
ship.
Should we kill them all?
Well, we just dealt with that in the...
Well, it did have me wondering what it would be like if this was, you know, the first episode of Star Trek you'd ever seen and didn't know that Romulans were the bad guys. I mean, you'd know pretty quickly by the music. But it is neat, like you say, the very next scene after this transmission we can't quite make out, but the subtitles said were when will you get here, we face an imminent core breach. So they're like, well, fuck, we got to get you over there ASAP, Riker. And so in the transporter room, like you say, our new transporter chief, Brosmer, because we have rotating transporter chiefs as we get ready for Deep Space Nine.
Pour one out for Cole Meany. I wish Cole Meany was there, honestly.
Oh, me too. I think she does a great job, but I think you just miss something having to wonder who this character is and whether we need to adapt to them being there or whether they're going to have a showy moment as a guest star. Anyway, it's one of the few times I'll say, yeah, we want the famous actor back in there, but we do.
Well, and I wonder if there was some kind of behind-the-scenes thing that Nemesis missed, because she has a good chunk. I mean, she's not, she's probably a guest star, right? I don't know what the contracts are, but she's not a featured extra. She has a lot of dialogue, and that's not usually what they give to a featured extra.
Well, and she's got plot, like.
Yeah.
I was, of course, though, the moment I saw her, I was like, something's going to go wrong with this transporter, and they're going to blame the older woman. Oh, my God.
Well, and it's she's true. An ensign, right? And she looks, I mean, I don't want to cast aspersions on her, but she looked older.
No, she looked older. I think the ensign was a different character, Jimmy. I think she was always referred to as chief.
Yep, you're right. She was on the bridge. Instant.
So in the transporter room, as they're getting to leave, we get, you know, the voice of reason, Riker and Worf, disarming Ro and Geordi. And as you guys mentioned, Ro says under her breath, well, this is a bad idea. And Riker gets all spiky with her. What? Yeah. And she said, oh, nothing, sir. I love the relationship. I love it. We love it. We get a lot about it in this episode.
There's a lot of context in that sir being like.
Right. I've seen your penis. So <back off.
laughs> Which goes through the entire episode. I think she's really thinking about that, not his penis, but thinking about their relationship and what it means to Will Riker the whole
we
time.
All are now.
It's a nice setup in this one little exchange they have here.
Agreed.
I think that would have been nice, actually, Greg, if during the running through the hall scene, instead of the girl in the space towel, it would have been Riker. And Rose stops and looks. It's like, I got to go do other stuff.
Yeah. Let's make that episode ourselves. I like this one. We've got the beginning right there. All right, go. By which I mean we'll continue. So we arrive to a hell of little fires and an officer wandering around with a fire extinguisher. It's time for a chorus number about pulling together in a tragedy when the higher-ups don't care. All right, let's lead with the basses. And one, two, three, go. Our heroes beam in, and Riker liaises right away with the main Romulan guy who gets all aflutter at the mere mention of the Enterprise. My goodness, the Enterprise. Whew, for us. Geordi diagnoses the problem with the help of the people already working on it. Apparently, the glufus nodule preclibated the vestibular bicuspid valve, making it ultimately non-cartibular and in need of replication. There was some really good Trekno babble there, Jimmy G. Were you excited?
Oh, yeah. It was great. Well done. Well done, writing staff.
I don't know. I think yours is better, Eric. I think we should go with yours.
Well, I really enjoy the Trekno babble on this one.
We should put that in our script of this... new episode that we're making. I also love the line that Riker has here where he's like, who is in charge here? Where he's
yes, that was my next bit. It's so fun.
It's so good.
And it's like me, the guy who you were just chatting with. It's me. I'm the one. It's like, okay, fine. We want to take the doohickey over there to our place and replicate it with computers. It's complicated. All right, can we do that?
Well, he's a little self-deprecating. He's like, well, I'm only the science officer, but I guess I'm in charge.
Yes. So the captain's dead, so yeah, I guess it's me.
He was a jerk, though.
He says, sure, take it. And LaForge says, you know, two folks in a doohickey for transport. Aye, sir. It starts, but it does that thing where the transporter stutters.
Sorry, the stupid interjection. Was it phasing? Question mark. Cut that out.
I suppose
they
it
can't
was.
All be home runs.
You know, it does the thing where the signal is garbled or the lock isn't stable or the interference is considerable or the intervening materials are not ideal. You know, we get the need for more power to the primary energizing core, which is, I mean, that's bad. You don't want to hear that when you're in transport. You think they hear it like when you're taking off and you suddenly hear the captain say something and you're not quite sure what it is? They hear that power to the energizing core, please?
We're going to put you under 5, 4, 3. Shit.
This isn't looking so good. What did he say?
I know.
So they have to abort, but no worries. She says they should be right back where you are. And so we all wait. And I mean, that's the best special effect when nothing has to happen. Right. So nothing happens.
Right.
And oops, I can't locate their power, their patterns. And this is key. She says, we've lost them, sir. Oh, very good.
Weave.
Very good weave. Oh, that's lovely. Oh, spread that responsibility around. I think that was very well done. So a lot just happened. I don't remember this episode at all, it occurs to me, at this point in rewatching, but I'm very excited. So did y'all remember this one? Did this one stick with you?
No.
Everybody's shaking their heads. No, that's fun.
No memory of this one.
Which is odd because it's pretty good. But yeah. I was like, I just knew how that it would resolve well. Because, you know, I've been with the franchise for a while, but still it was like, oh, how are they going to fix this? These guys are gone. So I was excited. I was like, I'm really excited to see where they go.
Yeah. And at the time, you've got to think you come back from commercial right here and they're going to say, you know, all right, we found, you know, their trail or something like that. But the very first words you hear is, I've done all I can, sir. I'm afraid they're gone. Like, that's it. Oof. They're reinforcing it right away when we come back. They can't have materialized somewhere else. They say, counselor. And then Troy has this long pause and then finally just shakes her head. And I'm like, what does that mean? What does that mean? So that's what she has to offer.
She's usually got such a pinpoint way of feeling, you know, where everyone is at all times. We know it's never been wrong. But at this point, she's like, no, I can't feel them.
I feel like sometimes Troy is just like, that was Gene Roddenberry's idea and the writers for 7 seasons were like, fuck that. We are not going to do anything to help this actor out at all with her supposed superpowers. Like, they do nothing to help her.
True. No, nothing. So she gives her large shake of the head. We're still looking at a core breach at the Romulans, Riker says. And Picard says, Data, take a shuttle with 2 more engineers. Ensign, keep watching that vessel and make special note if there's any sign that it might explode, he says.
And move away from it.
There's a lot of responsibility to put on this unnamed ensign.
They're in crisis mode.
Any sign that it's about to explode? Like the core breach that they talked about? Aye, aye, sir. We're on the Romulan ship trying to fix stuff. Worf comes running up saying we're cut off from the rest of the ship. 73 Romulans are still alive, though. And then one of the other Romulans says, 73?
Yeah.
And I spent the next 40 minutes of the episode going like, when's that going to come back?
Exactly. Right. Exact same thing. And it never came back. And there's another moment I can't remember where they, oh, yeah, it was the Enterprise. The way he says Enterprise, and it was like, here's a clue.
Right, mm-hmm. Earlier on.
Enterprise is a clue, and then 73, and it's like, that meant nothing. That sentence was
nothing.
Like Troy's abilities. You built it up, and then didn't do anything to support it.
Yep.
Crazy.
But we got alarms, and suddenly the temperature has jumped to 200 plundinkles. Because I love when they come up with...
Calicams.
With foreign measurements. It's really fantastic.
They had 2 in this episode, too.
We shall lose containment forthwith. Riker says we got to jettison the core. Oh, no. We got to do it manually. Of course we got to do it manually. Worf, go help the man. So we have more alarms. They have 1 minute and 5 seconds. Hey, Enterprise, use your shields as soon as it clears the hull. Okay, envelop us. Worf and the Romulan guy got to slip some switches and move some big metal stuff with Riker's key grimacing help. And then what happens? Who wants to take this bit?
They eject it manually.
When Riker flings the thing aside?
Well, when Riker can't really move the door.
Oh, this
and
is
then
so
Data
bad.
Comes
and then
up
Data,
and is like,
a,
oh, excuse
like
me, can Papa handle it?
Yeah. Like a friggin' like a little...
Drapes.
Drapes, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
But the best bit is where Data's like, excuse me, sir. Like,
yes.
I might be able to be of service
and
here.
We only have 5 seconds.
Yeah, we both know the truth.
He's missing a like crack of the knuckles and a cracking of the neck before he does it too. That would have been a little bit better.
Yes, a full-on Danny Glover before he does it.
Getting too old for this shit.
5 seconds to spare. Perfect timing. We're still here. We go back to serene starship visuals, but after that opening, I just don't trust it. Something's still going down. Where the hell are Geordi? And oh my God, Ro is lying in the middle of the hallway. Will someone not help her? She stands up. The little communicator doesn't make the cricket noise, which you know is bad vibes.
Double bad. This is such a really fun moment because Picard says he's going to sick bay. We don't really know why he's going to sick bay, but he's doing his little walk. And we as the audience see that body on the ground. And I don't know about you guys, but I immediately was like, what the fuck is that? And then why doesn't he notice it? And it's strong reveal because I mean, not like I forgot about Ro and LaForge, but there had been so much wham bam action and sci-fi techno babble that I kind of forgotten about that whole plot. And so it was a really nice reveal to be like, oh shit, no, that's Ro. And there are all these question marks are there in our heads as audience members, and it's really well played.
There's this, everything that happens to her is so wonderful, the reveal, right? And it starts with the communicator not working, and then it goes to the door not opening for her. Yes. And it reminded me as a teacher of younger people how amusing it is to watch a child try to use an actual faucet that has, you know, like handles on it when you're there in a bathroom, because they just stick their hands underneath it and assume that the water is going to come out and it doesn't. And the look of betrayal on their tiny little faces when the water does not just succumb to their will is so fantastic. And she has that same moment of like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Right?
It's the Scotty moment of computer.
Hello, computer. Yes, yes, it's got that same Scotty vibe. How quaint, the keyboard.
Nurses ignore her once she does get into the sickbay door by sneaking through someone else's open.
The writers.
She tries her I need the manager voice, and it doesn't even work.
The writers of that could have used a different line. I don't like that she repeated, hello, I need some help. Like
yes.
Three times, I would have maybe I would have used different tactics as a person, and I think she would have been better.
Hello, I need some help. Later.
Yeah, she could have Meisnered it, and it would have been a lot better, I think.
What Meisner? What does that mean?
Like repeat it in different ways, but with different.
No, I know.
You're the Meisner person. You tell us.
All right. So she isn't. Well, I mean, she might as well be a .. ghost. Bev, we overhear telling Jean-Luc not to give up. Jean-Luc says, nope, they're super dead. And Bev says, oh, okay, I'll make out their death certificates. Did Ro have any family? And Ro's like, I'm right here. I'm not dead. What's going on? And Picard walks directly through her.
Right.
Wild.
Yeah.
Commercial, what's up? Kate, what was happening through your head? Or would be if Picard walked right through you.
Delicious.
I mean, that's the ultimate, right? Like, I watched that little thing and was like, hashtag goals.
This is the first time I'm really seeing that this story is basically Ghost and Huck Finn had a baby. And this is the scene where I kind of put that all together, where it's going to be about her seeing people's reaction to her death and LaForge is, doing the same thing and what that means and how that might change what she's going through. And then, of course, all the visual jokes that Ghost did so well 2 years earlier.
I wrote down, this is right about the moment that I wrote down Ghost was just about a year before this, so those effects became affordable right around this time.
Oh, my love.
So we come back to Ro trying to communicate with Crusher. You know, hand phases through the desk when she tries to smack it with anger. Here's where I wrote, we get some ghost level visual effects as Bev deceases Ro in the records. Riker begins the power transfer to the Romulan ship, a nice little effect. The main power grid is now online. Engineering is making a new engine core for the Romulans out of a tin can and a couple of spools of copper wool wrapped around a Slim Jim or something. Wouldn't go more than a couple times the speed of light, but she'll do, they say. She'll do. Data has found an energy fluctuation in Transporter Room 3 and will investigate. And so we get a personal favor from the captain for Data. Geordi is my best friend, he says. May I plan his memorial?
So sweet.
And Picard has this nice little moment before he says yes. And as he says yes, it's not too much, not much. You know, we get to read into it as much as we want to. It's really a lovely moment between the two of them. And then we come to two extras playing with a tricorder. One of my favorite moments of the season. They don't really get to say anything, but it's like one, the human, and one, the Romulan, are just kind of going, so this is my tricorder. I use it to cord all the tries. I come around. And do you have a tricorder? And the neat, it feels like they want Chris Farley for this moment. So Worf says the Romulans want a laptop. They want a laptop, Captain. No way. But he says, wait, what if we gave them an Apple IIe? And they're like, yes, okay, yes, that's fine. We can give them DOS and shit. Yeah, that'll do. We'll make that work. Thanks. And so Ro finds Geordi in engineering, of course. So now we know Geordi has gone through something similar. It's a nice kind of advance around the time. I think we're all going, what about Geordi? We're ghosts, she says. Woo! And they have a couple of moments of kind of whimsy there before being like, okay, let's figure it out, though. Seriously. They can touch each other. They get that nice emotional little ET moment. Did any of you think anything else was possibly going to happen? Or were you pretty confident they were going to be able to touch each other?
No, but all I thought about was like, oh, Geordi, don't read too much into this, buddy.
Made for each other.
I like that Geordi's argument for why they're not dead. I mean, he mentions the visor, which that makes sense. But his other thing is, and we're wearing clothes. And I'm like, what is that?
Like, no, he says a uniform, though, right?
Well, yeah, but like.
Not just clothes, but like.
I'm a blind ghost with clothes. No, he basically says clothes.
I guess he's trying to say that if they were spirits, they might appear to be having clothes. But like, he can actually physically move around. The things
Where's
that
the
he's
white
wearing, I guess. But
I guess.
There's a lot of things like that. And I think, you know, maybe Jimmy, you might want to bring up some floors.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's ridiculous that they can walk through walls, but they stand on floors. They phase through everything except for their feet touch.
Yeah.
I noted that.
As long as we've had ghosts, we've had these questions.
It's a lazy argument for suspended disbelief.
It's mostly because the floors of starships are made of other dead people. So they can.
Oh, that's the barrier.
There you go. There you go. See, he's got an answer for you, Jimmy.
Science. That's science for you.
That's science fiction.
Where's your faith now? All right. So he keeps crushing her. Arguments, and then she finally says, according to Dr. Crusher, we are dead. We're deads. We got to make peace. And Geordi's like, nope, couldn't be me. Make peace with yourself. I'm going to transporter room 3, okay?
Yeah.
Bosmer's like, I had no warning. Data thinks it's related to the damage to the Romulan ship, which is interesting because it happened before they got there. But he says the chromatomatominon fields are here. And how did they get here, though? And they all come to it at the same time. They traveled on the transporter beam. And are these chromatobombs dangerous? She says. He says, no, I'll eradicate them when I get back. So this, we figure, of course, has to, you know, result in an actual subplot, since they stated it so fiercely, as opposed to some of the earlier ones where we thought there was going to be a subplot that didn't materialize. So Ro is walking around the bridge like an actor after the final performance, like she's alone and she's touching everything. And the crew is like, get off here. We are supposed to take this place apart. Riker and Picard are discussing the memorial services for Ro and Geordi, and Riker would like to speak. And Picard says, yes, you've known him longer than any of us. But what does Riker respond with to our delight?
Actually, right. I was going to say a few words about Ensign Ro and the love that we made to each other.
Yes. And Ensign Ro responds with, ooh, what were you going to say about me? What were you going to say about me? Which is one of the best recurring themes of an episode of Star Trek that I can remember in a long time. Like, the whole episode, she's obsessed with what Riker would have possibly said about her at her funeral.
The giddiness.
So we'll continue to talk about that.
That she has, both in this scene and each time it's brought up, is what makes it fun, right? She really doesn't, I mean, maybe it's more important to her, but the way she's portraying it is that it's like a salacious, like gossipy tidbit more than anything else, yeah. Which makes it super fun.
Yeah.
She seemed to play it up as the actor. It was like, this is a fun, funny bit. And it was totally believable, and it was a nice new look at Ro, because she's always been so serious before. We get a whole different Ro here, and it's not like a lot of episodes where the character changes to suit that bottle episode and then we don't go back. This builds on Ro and adds to the depth of her character. So it was really fun.
Total agreement. And I also really like when we acknowledge, and I bring this up a little bit later, in addition to Ro having fun with the ghost concept here, never has a character enjoyed walking through walls like Jordy LaForge enjoys walking through walls. Like, once that guy figures out he can do that, he's just in love with the concept.
And of course he would, right? Like, if he could just walk through walls, he's like, I'm not using doors. I can walk through walls. That's what I'm going to do.
But he also loves putting his hand in things.
Yeah. Yes. I found myself wondering, like, do you get lost ever? Like, you know, you like when you go into the trees or some bushes, like you kind of know where you are, but like now it's a different look. It's like you get in the wall. It's like, okay, do I need to go left or right now? I can't remember. It's like you're not seeing it the same
but
way.
But Jordy would know, right? Jordy knows the layout of the ship better than anybody.
He wouldn't know.
How thick do you think these walls are?
I'm assuming when I hear the word bulkhead, I'm assuming girth.
That was my nickname in college.
All right, so Ro talks to the captain once everybody's gone, and she says, hey, you can't even see me, and I'm still intimidated. And she gets into the truly mushy stuff when Jordy interrupts, like, he interrupts by coming in and starting to talk to her, and then goes, excuse me, captain.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, I love so that.
Good. That was perfect.
So good.
That was like a spig take, right? That was a
spig and take. That Ro doesn't really even care. He's like, I'm not even going to comment on that. Let's just keep going. It's so perfect for us. That was for us. Well,
and this is a great moment, at least for me, to talk about the difficulty of these scenes for both sides, right? There's a difficulty in giving everything you have, right, to somebody who cannot react to you, right? So that it feels like you're acting to a wall, essentially.
Right.
And then there's the other part of that, which is you have to sit there and be completely placid while somebody is screaming in your ear and yelling about things. And you have to be like, do, everything is fine. Like, it's just an interesting actor's choice on how you deal with those two different elements.
And I bet there were more than a few takes where Stuart cracks up, right, at that whole thing, right? Because you can, and or gives a joke at the right moment where he can say something, because you're right, like, that's such an SNL sketch type of thing where, like, I know I'm not supposed to laugh, but I can't not laugh now.
Where either side would have such a good time trying to break the other if they had that kind of set going on. And I would love to see it, because they're all funny. Like, Michelle Forbes is funny and Patrick Stewart is funny, and, you know, they're all great. So I would love to see what they would have done. Because what was the one that made the rounds the other day? Was it Worf and somebody high-fiving each other in back because they had survived?
Yeah, I've seen that.
Did you see that one?
Yeah, they're all like high-fiving each other. It was like after one of those.
Picard is being very serious. Everybody's looking directly downstage to camera. And Picard says something about, yes, my officers survived. And I think it's like Geordi and Worf are standing behind him, and they just high five behind, and nobody sees them. It's a fantastic meme that was just, God, I'm so old. I'm so old. I'm here discussing a meme that I saw last week. All right. So we're moving forward. They're getting a shuttle going to the Romulan ship, Geordi says, and we got to be on it because that's where the answers are. But Ro's still on the We're Already Dead, and Geordi says, come on, I need your help. So just come on. And this is where I'm like, Geordi loves walking through walls. He just goes right through.
Struts. He just struts on through.
Oh, he loves it. They're on the shuttle, and Data and Worf are now discussing Geordi's funeral. And Worf suggests that humans do solemn and dignified stuff. And Data says, but Jordan's stuff's super complicated. And Ro's like, don't do it. Don't do it. Mm-hmm. Don't do the death chant. Don't do it. The death chant sucks. It'd be like people going, well, Eric was Irish. Wasn't he Roman Catholic? And I'm like, no.
Ave Maria.
So Data says he's going to make his own ritual farewell to friends. And I'm like, Data, coming up with a ritual farewell to friends is something I'm very into. I never knew what a friend was, he says, till Jordy. He accepted me for who I am. I do not know how to say goodbye. And then Ro says, seems almost human. Like, shut up, Ro. You don't know him yet.
That's a really fun moment. I love all of these conversations around how to celebrate life and death and the fact that they're witnessing these conversations. Again, it's so Huck Finn. It is that idea of like, how will I be remembered? And how can I mess with it in some way is the implied thing here. Because, right, we know they're going to try and mess with it. That's, you know, as Jimmy said, we know that these two characters are not going to be in this permanent phased state if we know anything about the episodic nature of Star Trek, but it's really fun to see like how they are reacting to their own deaths.
Well, and right here, you know, Worf says that it's a time to celebrate, not to mourn. And Geordi says exactly what you're saying. He says, I don't plan on being commemorated before my time. The whole point is we're going to not do this. We're going to thwart it. We're going to thwart it together, they say. So the Chronotonian emissions may have done it. You know, was your cloaking device damaged? They said to the Romulans, we must eliminate these emissions for your safety because all the systems were damaged. We must eliminate these emissions. And Geordi's looking through the Romulan tech by sticking his face right through the machine, which is the kind of shtick I'm really super here for. He just fully sticks his face in it, pulls it back out and goes, this something's funny going on here. here, put your face in here. I'll show you what I'm talking about.
It
just made me so happy.
What is that Gonzo bit in Muppet Capers? Like when his nose is stuck in the elevator thing, it's like, you got to try this. It's so great. You got to put your nose into this elevator.
He figures out just by sticking his head in, he's like, they're working on a cloaking machine. There was a tiny little black box in there. I saw it.
Well, it's probably
just incredible.
Cloaking machine prototype number one.
Yes.
He says the Klingons used to try to combine a phase inverter and a cloaking device. And of course, that means they could be a Shadow Cat and Dr. Susan Storm, even hide inside a planet. Maybe the Romulans were working on that same deadly dream, he says.
Deadly dream.
So we are phased. Jimmy.
I love this, that the Klingons first got it, because in the Final Voyage book, it's the Klingons who first have a cloaking. And when Kirk's father is piloting the Enterprise, and he mimics that by warping to and fro continuously to make it look like he has cloaking to the Romulans. And the Romulan who's on the ship is like, the Romulans will spend the rest of their lives trying to discover cloaking technology now. And it's sort of like follow suit that the Klingons first did it. Now the Romulans are just sort of following, trying to reverse engineer what the Klingons had already did. So it's great because it's a nod to what's happened in the books in the past. And it also gives the Klingons a little more depth, right? They're not just warrior people. Like, they invented cloaking and they were the first ones to try this new technology. So they're like, I just wonder what those scientists are like and how they're treated in the Klingon world.
Well, if they can fight, they're probably treated okay. So Data finds more, Cromation activity, and he moves to address that. And the Romulans discuss having a surprise for the Enterprise, a tachyon buildup in their dilithium chamber, so that when they go to warp, the Enterprise will explode. And Geordi and Ro overhear this, but how to warn, how to foil the plot. So the power transfer is still going forward. There's a new mysterious Romulan roaming the Enterprise unimpeded. Kate, yes.
Well, that guy I love because I clocked him at the beginning of this scene, right? Like, they come into the Romulan and I was like, what is his deal? Like, he just is grumpy and broken. And I was kind of like, oh, he's like mirroring the like mood on the ship sort of. And so then then I forgot about him, right? And then when they go to leave the ship, the Romulan ship, and he gets up and follows them, oh, it's such a great payoff. Like, it's just such a great reveal.
And he walks through the little machine.
Right, walks through the machine. So, you know, he's, yep. Oh, it's so good.
He's got phased. This guy reminds me so much of, I'm blanking on the name of the actor, but the guy who's the ghost who teaches Patrick Swayze how to touch things on the subway car. I don't know why. Those two characters, this Romulan.
Vincent Schiavelli.
Vincent Schiavelli. I knew we had talked about him before. He is that kid, this character in my mind, right? The one who's has more experience being phased, and he wants to try to get out get, you know, it's a little bit of a secondary antagonist here in this. And I clocked him too. I was like, that guy's means something. It's a good camera shot though here on this Romulan ship, because in the opening they do this that thing with the fires that you mentioned, and it's all in the foreground, and this character is in that same foreground, so we kind of don't see it as too odd to begin with. But then as he gets a few more shots, you start to get the question mark: who is this guy? And then the reveal, as Kate said, is totally perfect.
Early in the episode too, Greg, there was a great foreground shot of Picard. Mm. And Eric alluded to it at the beginning, in the opening. He walks around the front of the navigation stand, and it's a close-up of a profile of his face, and you see the bridge behind him, and it's sort of him in contemplation.
All right, so Data has found three new chromanthamium fields, and he wants to start decontamination immediately, and Geordi says, hey, there's no way that's natural, so he starts to put two and two and together to get seven or eight. And in sick bay, transportation room 3, shuttle bay 2, the captain's ready room, they see these fields seem to be appearing at random. But Geordi says, these are the places we've already been. We're creating these fields. Data will develop a way to eliminate these fields, though. This is the new plan. And we see Geordi and Data working together without even meaning to. It's great. Mm. Geordi tries to communicate even through green screen. Uh-oh. A Romulan is waiting on the bridge with a disruptor pointed right at Ro as she comes on, asking for Geordi. Geordi's still down there playing fish with Data. This is all happening so fast. These aren't just random patterns Geordi's creating. Come on, uh-oh. Data hit Geordi with an anion beam from the tricorder, and he was suddenly a little bit solid. It was working, but then Data stops doing it.
I just love those shots of Geordi, like, putting his hand into the table. Like, he's doing it with such intention.
Oh, yeah. He's playing whack-a-mole with no opponent. It's fantastic.
It's really
a little imagination robot. Put it together. Right?
He's getting angry at his robot friend.
You got this.
So the Romulan has his phase disruptor. He leaves Ro as his prisoner. She goes through a door. She's waiting for him as he comes through and smacks him. And now there's a chase. We're going through walls, through doors, through corridors. There's an even larger chromatolite ding-dong field, and it must be Ro, Data says, or Geordi says. And Data finds it. They go chase Ro, and Ro's being chased by the Romulan, and they're chasing both of them. It somehow finds a way not to be absurd. It's just kind of fun.
Slice of life, too. Like, we get to see...
Guy randomly working... Oh, okay, it gets pretty absurd with the guy randomly working out, and they kind of run through his shit. Like, they linger on him.
And the lady in a towel, and then that couple having dinner.
About to fight.
Oh, the dinner party scene. Yes, well disrupted by Data opening the door so Geordi could see. Geordi was right there. The door was no obstacle, except Geordi was on the other side of it, so he couldn't see the door he was supposed to run through to save.
His visor couldn't go through and see the fields? Or just go
Let's
in?
Let's not pull on that string.
What?
Let's not pull on the string. The whole sweater will fall.
How great is that the action of... knocking this guy out of the ship. Very ghost-like to me as well. This seems like the ghost logic of like, oh, if you do XYZ, it's going to kill him. And it did.
Here's my question. As he is phased, does he spend eternity just floating, or does he actually asphyxiate, right? Like,
right.
I think yes. I think he's just like in the Phantom Zone. He's like that, like they wanted Zod to be.
That's what I was just thinking.
Forever and ever and ever. If I were Geordi, I'd never sleep again.
They could come back to him in another episode. Now I totally buy it. Like, they pick him up 100 years later, and he's like, "I've been floating here for 20 minutes."
Yeah, I love this. Murdered, but deserved it. So now we're on the bridge. We get over shoulder on Chief Brosmer. The Romulan guy thanks Picard, even while he's trying to murder him. Don't do it, Captain. Data suggests not engaging the warp drives until the sweep that Brosmer is doing is over. Thank you, Data. Saved us all for the nonce.
Ro and LaForge are so happy at this. They celebrate. They almost do that high five.
Hands, like they do their little hand holding underneath. Like it's precious.
It's adorable.
It's nice.
Really cute.
Yes. They go to a moment where they're looking for a place where people will all be gathered, where some of this decontamination could happen. So maybe they could be glimpsed for half a second. So they're like, let's all go to the funerals and tend forward. Let's all go to the funerals. Picard talks about meeting Geordi for the first time and tells a story about mentioning how the shuttle had been a piece of shit they've been riding in and Geordi stayed up all night souping it up. He wants that guy on my team. And what are you going to say about Ro? He says, yeah, I got this. And Ro's like, what are you going to say? Just what are you going to say? Tell me.
So good.
And she is thwarted once again. By the emergence of a big-time ragtime jazz party in 10 Forward. With balloons and goofiness. And Geordi is immediately touched and delighted. And Ro's like, what is this shit? They're happy I'm gone? Fuck you.
So
it's kind of nice how quickly she comes around when Geordi explains, no, this is pretty cool. Party we shall. Do you guys all want this? I want party. I vote party.
Oh, hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
And definitely an extra trombone so that Riker can participate.
Yes, we got to have Riker pull his axe out. As the ragtime jazz goes, they start making as many Cro-Magneton fields as they can. Ro shoots Riker through the head because she'll never know what he was going to say at her funeral. It's very aggressive. But
that was very aggressive. Was anyone else scared when they were shooting the phasers everywhere? I got a little bit freaked out.
Yes.
It was a lot.
Aren't you saying it's a possibility you turn solid for a second? Stop it.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
So Brosmer says chromatons are being destroyed, but their intent forward are a lot of chromies suddenly. So Data says, go ahead and cleanse. Just cleanse us. It starts, but Worf can't see them yet. As we have to go hard somehow, we can overload this disruptor because there are ways being put out there.
But he almost sees them, right? And he has Michael Dorn has a great moment where he's like,
yeah.
He has a little, almost a spit take of, what was that?
And he just eats another shrimp.
Yeah.
So they set up a disruptor to go to overload, so they'll have to overload the overload to overload it, and then they'll be seen. So they set it up, they run, it blows right at the feet of Data and Picard. Geordi and Ro come up near them. Data says, well, let's really decontaminate it this time, though, like super-duper decontaminator. So they do so. We get seen. Say, hey, Data, you're a computer. Did you see that? He says, yes, I saw that. So they know it was real. And Geordi goes, put it together, Data!
You got all the pieces.
He believes he may know what has happened. The Cro-Magnon fields that they cloaked, and now here they are with anions. Set the anionic beam to high. Flood the room with amniotic fluid, he says. Do you see us? Of course. Geordi comes up to Data. Geordi, it's good to see you. Data, never been to a better funeral. I'm hurrying up here. After party, Geordi and Ro are eating alone. He's hungry. It's been 2 days without food, which answers it. Like, they could live for a long time. He wasn't there talking about how hungry he was, which he would be in real life after 2 days with no food or water. I think the guy floats forever and ever, and it'll be nagging on Geordi's mind until the end of time.
Forever and ever, amen.
Jimmy, well, what do you think about the end of this particular episode and your final thoughts?
I'm going to give this 8 ghost anti-fusing floors. The only real, you know, question mark was, why do the ghosts get to walk on the floors, but they can phase through everything else? But it was lovely seeing Ro have a whole different aspect to her laughing hysterically at the end. We get a different Ro than we've had before, and that's something that can carry us forward. So I didn't remember this episode, so it was a great, pleasant surprise to rediscover it, to re-engage with it.
That's where they got the title.
That's where we got the title. I think you should absolutely watch this episode because of what I just said with how it makes Ro in particular a deeper character. And then some of the geeky things that I think it really plays a nod to the story of the Klingons with just a couple of throwaway lines, which is always great with an episodic where there's little things that link the whole universe together that spread throughout the different franchises. So absolutely go out and check it out. And it's a great one. It's great. I love it. Super good.
All right. Perfect. Thank you, Jimmy. From there, why don't we go with Mr. Greg Tito? What did you think of this episode?
I am also going to give this 8 shrimps, as my mother-in-law would say. It is a really great slice of life episode, even though it doesn't really feel like that in a way, because we get to see a little bit of what's going on with the Enterprise, as well as, I mean, I guess the stakes are high, but it's only really high for these two characters. Jimmy already mentioned how great Ro was, but I actually really like how we got a lot of Geordi information in this episode too. He doesn't go the way and try to, you know, bond with a woman like he has if he had been stuck in things like before. They really have a great friendship and respect throughout this whole thing, and they have to work together, and I really enjoy that aspect, as well as this final scene of them laughing and enjoying their party, the end of their party with all the drinking and good food that they have there and laughing at each other. It really did feel very nice. And I thought the performances of the Romulans was really interesting. Even Michael Dorn having a few really strong moments of muted anger, the idea that he's there helping Romulans, you know, which a few seasons ago was impossible for him, right? Like he felt like he had to talk about how he had to kill these mortal enemies because they killed his family on Khitomer, and here he is on those ships. And you could see him, the character, still wrestling with that, even though he is growing and being a good Federation officer and following orders. But doing the bureaucratic fuck you of giving them an old computer made me laugh as well. So lots of great character stuff in here. The writing on it is fairly strong. I agree, the floors thing feels weird. It's the thing you think about the whole time, but it's such a, I mean, it's sci-fantasy, it's sci-fi. You kind of have to suspend some disbelief with all the technobabble.
I think that's just a basic ghost story thing.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
I'm with you.
But they weren't ghosts. They were alive, just phased only laterally, not vertically. And why would they be affected by gravity? Yeah, all that stuff. Once you pick it apart like a sweater, it falls apart. But if you don't, the sweater is pretty good looking.
Well, I just always assume that we don't know the physics of it. All right, Kate, we got an 8 and an 8. What about Kate?
We're going to stick with it. I'm going to give it 8 2-hour death chance. Felt like what was already said by both Jimmy and Greg eloquently. I love this episode because it was new to me. I didn't remember it. And so it was delightful. And delightful in that we got to see a new side of Ro, as has been mentioned. And really a sort of a different side of Geordi, right? Like that Geordi is so sure of himself in this episode, right? Like he's like, nope, we're not dead, and I'm gonna figure it out and it's fine, right? Like where oftentimes we see him sort of wrestle with things or be a sad sack in love, or you know, like this is just where we get to see him charging ahead and charging forward. We get backstory in terms of how long everybody has known each other, which I think is neat. We get again, a great job by Michelle Forbes in this episode of showing us this different side in a way that felt earned and not like we've forced someone to change in order to fit this episode. Like it felt like an extension of what we have seen from Ro in the past in terms of how she has been growing in her relationship with everybody on board the ship, and how, you know, time has passed and she's more sure of her place. Even the arguments that she continues to have with Riker, right? That there's less animosity there than in the past because, you know, they did it. I just really like this episode. It was unique in that we focused so much on the side what would normally be the side story, right? Like normally the Romulans needing help from the Enterprise would be the big bad story, right? And it is. It's still important, but it plays second fiddle to this human story that we get to go along with. So I'm a big fan of this, and I think everyone should watch it.
Well, I love it. I mean, far be it from me to argue. So I will also give it 8 big trademark Troy head shakes. They set her up for complete failure episode wide. The episode itself, I greatly enjoyed for largely the same reasons you guys say. Like, I do not remember it. If you had said to me, hey, you remember that episode where Geordi and Ro were kind of ghosts on the Enterprise? I'd say, no, I don't remember that. And if you said, hey, you remember that one where the Romulans tried to build up an excess of gas in the dilithium chambers so that when it went to warp speed, it would blow up the Enterprise? I'd be like, nope, drawing a blank. Don't remember any of that shit at all. Or any other way you'd like to describe what happens in this episode or fallout from this episode, any of it. The answer is no, I do not remember. And I would think that that means it was a bad episode, but it's not. It's really well written, well performed. There's a fun little mystery on it. I'm, you know, not in a mood where I want to be actually worried for the future of characters that I like. So I like knowing that they'll be fine. You know, all of those things at once. It's like a comforting, exciting new 45 minutes of television that I didn't know existed. So I hope we run into 25 more just like him as we continue to examine the rest of the series. I had a great time rewatching this one and hosting it. I think we were all agreed that since Jimmy won't speak up to defend himself, that since his pants are wet, it's time that we we shut down this particular episode.
Thank you so much for riding along with us on this episode of Re-Engage. Next week, we continue our mission with the next episode of the 5th season of Star Trek The Next Generation. Follow Re-Engage on Blue Sky and the site formerly known as Twitter at ReengageTNG to get updates when episodes are published. You can follow our various cultural bridge officers. Kate Yeager is at Yeagerlicious. Eric Curry is at Eric Falls Down. Greg Tito is visible at gregtito.com and at Greg Tito on Twitter and Blue Sky. Jimmy G is at the Jimmy G on Insta. Re-Engage is edited by Greg Tito, Kate Yeager, or Jimmy G. Logo artwork is by mojojojo_97 on Twitter or mojo97.com. Theme music is by Ryan Marth. Thanks for listening. Join us next week as we re-engage.